Can't Wait for Christmas is a proud member of the Christmas Podcast Network.
Hey, buddy, what you doing?
Is it Christmas yet?
No, sorry, not yet.
I can't wait for Christmas.
Yeah, I can't wait for Christmas either. In fact, let's celebrate now.
Welcome to the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast.
It's September 25th, 2024, and that means there's only 3 months left until Christmas. Today on the show, we'll look at a Christmas dessert that people either love to hate or hate to love, fruitcake. We'll also turn a current TikTok trend into a way to get more Christmas into your life. I throw Christmas into politics. Sort of. Not really. You'll see. And Adam from Merry Britsmas stops by to share with us his five golden things. Okay, let's start the show! Welcome, Yule Believers, to the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast, the podcast all about Christmas history, Christmas traditions, Christmas media, and everything else Christmas. I'm your host and guy who is wondering where the burr in the burr months is, Tim Babb. Yeah, it's still pretty hot outside, but we made it to September, and already I see Christmas stuff popping up in stores. I saw it at Hallmark, Dollar Tree, Costco, and I hear Lowe's is already getting into the Christmas spirit. But despite all this commerce-related festivity, somehow it's not enough for me. I need something more, which leads us to our first segment. We need a little Christmas now.
We need a little Christmas now.
This tip to get a little Christmas now was inspired when I was watching an episode of the late night show After Midnight with Taylor Tomlinson. She was talking about a trend making the rounds on TikTok.
Some women on TikTok have started decorating the inside of their fridge.
It's called fridgescaping. Creative types organize and decorate the inside of their refrigerators with all sorts of things you wouldn't normally find in a fridge, like tulips, picture frames, even sculptures.
Yeah. Absolutely. What a serious video to describe something so silly. The way they say it's called fridgescaping makes me think, wait, do I have it? What are the symptoms? I like this trend because I'm the whitest woman alive. And because most of the time when I go to my fridge, I'm not even hungry. I'm just bored. I'd love to see my eggs with a cute little storefront. Yeah, like they're in a Nora Ephron movie. They're about to fall in love with Tom Hanks. I can't eat them.
Yes, the phenomenon of fridgescaping is taking the internet by storm. Well, actually, according to my feed, it's mostly people mocking it. But that's not stopping the people who are into it. Some of these folks have elaborate themes for the inside of their refrigerators. And that got me thinking. Why would I go out and buy a bunch of decorations to put in the fridge when I have boxes of decorations that don't get any use for 11 months out of the year? Might as well use some of them to brighten up my fridge and do some sort of Christmas fridgescaping. It's already cold in there. You can make it a year-round winter wonderland. And Taylor's joke about the eggs made me realize that you can totally doodle on your egg cartons. So I drew a string of Christmas lights on one and a Christmas tree on the other.
You have two cartons of eggs in your fridge?
Oh, hey, imaginary listener. Sounds kind of like Kermit the Frog.
Carl!
Yes, we have a carton of eggs and we have a separate carton where we store all the eggs that we have hard-boiled.
Oh, look who's fancy.
That's really your takeaway from this segment? I'm talking about Christmas fridgescaping.
Yeah, well, there's no room in my fridge for a second carton of eggs, much less a whole bunch of random Christmas decorations, but you do you.
I will, thank you very much. In fact, I'll post a picture of my egg carton doodles on our Instagram page. And speaking of things I'll be posting, and kind of in the spirit of needing a little Christmas now, but not really, I decided to do something very silly. You see, it's the election season here in the United States.
And I'm out of here.
Relax, I'm not going to tell anybody how to vote or who to vote for. That's not what this show is. I mean, I would like to encourage everybody who is eligible to vote to make sure they are registered and that they do vote, but even that's not what I'm talking about right now. Lately, when I've been going on walks around my neighborhood, I've been seeing more and more yard signs. Not for president, but for all the local races going on. Now, I know local races are some of the most important, and I know I will have to do some research on these candidates before Election Day, but right now, I have no idea who these names are that I'm seeing on these lawns. I'm like, surely some of these are made up. And then I thought to myself, I bet I could put a sign on my yard with a fake person and no one would know. But then I thought, what fake name should I use? Then I remembered a little endeavor we did here on the show back in 2020. With the help of our amazingly talented listeners, we produced a made-for-podcast Christmas movie that asked, what if Die Hard was a Hallmark movie? The movie was called A Bomb for Christmas, and it was actually a lot of fun to put together. If you haven't heard it, you can find it on Apple Podcasts by searching for A Bomb for Christmas, or in the other podcast apps, you might just have to search for Can't Wait for Christmas and then scroll through until you can find episode 74. You know what? I'll just put a link to it in the show notes if that helps. The point is, the main character of the movie was named Holly McTiernan, and I thought to myself, hey, that's a made-up name. So I made up a yard sign that says, Vote Holly McTiernan, and I'm totally putting it in my front yard the day this episode drops. Now, in the small print on the sign, where it would usually say something like, you know, running for city comptroller or whatever, my sign says, she's not running for everything, and she's not real, but you didn't know that. I just think this would be a funny thing to leave in my yard from now until Election Day. And I believe in sharing the fun, so I made this sign available in our Zazzle store, so if you want to confuse your neighbors, you can jump on the McTiernan bandwagon. Vote Holly, everybody!
I'm Holly McTiernan, and I approve this message.
All right, that's enough foolishness. Let's get on to our next segment, Five Golden Things. All year, I'm turning my countdown feature over to the other talented and merry hosts in the Christmas Podcast Network. Last time, we had Anthony and Tom from Tis the Podcast join us. And if you haven't heard our August episode, I highly suggest checking it out next. But don't go anywhere yet, because this month, we are lucky to have Adam from the Merry Britsmas Podcast. He's going to talk about some British Christmas music. Sorta. You'll see. I mean, you'll hear. You know what I mean. Take it away, Adam.
Hey, this is Adam from Merry Britsmas, a podcast all about British Christmas things such as TV, traditions, music, and all sorts of nonsense rubbish that's nostalgic if you're British, or just strange and unusual if you're not. Thanks so much to Tim for letting me share five golden things this month, and I thought I'd go very British by talking about five British Christmas classics that are really not about Christmas that much. We seem to have quite a few songs that appear on playlists and compilations and Christmas radio in the UK that when you listen don't seem to be about the best time of the year, but other factors have made them British Christmas standards, starting with
number 5,
The Power of Love by Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
The power of love, a force from above, leading my soul.
A very odd song from the controversial pop group Frankie Goes to Hollywood. It was a Christmas number one in 1984, and it had a nativity-themed video, which helped create a bit of a Christmas feeling. But the lyrics are all about monsters, vampires, creatures, and love, with no Christmas in sight. A cover of it was also used on a John Lewis Christmas advert too, which is a pretty big deal here.
Number 4.
Ring Out Solstice Bells by Jethro Tull, who are a progressive rock group, and the song has a progressive old-school folk feel to it. The song is actually about the winter solstice, so it's about the right time of year, and there's a reference to mistletoe, but it's more about old school solstice celebration than Christmas as we see it. It hasn't stopped it becoming a bit of a standard over here to hear at Christmas time or on radio though.
Number 3.
A Winter's Tale by David Essex.
It was only a winter's tale, just another winter's tale. Should the world take notice of one more love that's failed?
An actor and a singer, Essex had a few hits in the 70s in the UK, and A Winter Tale was released in 1982, co-written with Tim Rice, a famed songwriter for musicals like Jesus Christ Superstar, Evita, Aladdin and The Lion King. This song, though, is all about winter, snow and a failed love. No mention of Christmas, but it's become a big festive song here.
Number 2.
Walking in the Air by Alan Jones.
We're surfing in the air, we're swimming in the frozen sky, we're drifting over icy mountains floating by.
So this has a very strong festive link, as I'm sure some of you might know it's from The Snowman, a famed British animation based on a children's story about a snowman who comes to life. A version of this song is in the special, and it became a hit after it was released as a single, although the single was re-recorded by Alan Jones, as the original vocalist, Peter Alty, was not asked to record it for some reason. Once again, very wintry references, but apart from the snowman show, there's no specific Christmas stuff in this actual song.
Honourable mentions!
A quick honourable mention to Only You by the Flying Pickets.
All I needed was the love you gave. All I needed for another day. All I ever knew. Only you.
Which is an a cappella cover of a song by another band called Yazoo. But this cover was Christmas number one in 1983, and I have heard this tune become popular as a cover on some British artist Christmas albums recently.
Number one!
Stay Another Day by E17.
Baby, if you got to go away, don't think I could take the pain. Won't you stay another day?
E17 were a big boy band of the 1990s, and they released this song in 1994, and it became Christmas number one. The track is quite a melancholy number about losing someone you love, but with the addition of some Christmas bells and a video that shows the band wearing big winter white coats, it's become a Christmas standard here, and one of the most popular, always on radio, playlists, in shops, and in my house a lot too.
Thank you, Adam. I can honestly say I've never heard of any of those songs before, and I always love new Christmas music, even if it's technically not Christmas music. If you'd like to hear more of Adam, check out Merry Britsmas wherever you get your podcasts, or look for the link I put in the show notes of this episode. Now, I'd like to get personal for a quick second. Even though I run a Christmas podcast, there are certain topics I don't really talk about much because I don't really like them. For instance, I'm not a big fan of the flavor of peppermint. And that's everywhere at Christmas. People love it, so I haven't really talked about it much, because I don't want to cause any trouble. I really don't like eggnog, and that is a very popular Christmas drink, so I keep those thoughts to myself for the most part. But there is one foodstuff that is very closely associated with Christmas that I don't care for, and people have no problem making fun of. And I'm talking, of course, about fruitcake. Because fruitcake is the subject of a lot of stories, from people re-gifting each other the same fruitcake year after year, to that time they found decades-old fruitcake lost by someone on a trek to the South Pole, to the fact that the term is literally used to describe a crazy or eccentric person. So today, let's talk about fruitcake, where it came from, why it's associated with Christmas, and how it's so popular and such a joke at the same time.
Oh, everyone try some hot fruitcake today. Eat it all up and you will shout hooray.
Yay!
Everyone can get behind a mouthful of warm sunshine. Everyone eat a Christmas time cliche.
Let's start with where fruitcake came from, because it's one of those Christmas traditions that's technically older than Jesus. Yes, the story of fruitcake begins way back in ancient Rome. The world's oldest surviving cookbook, De Re Culinaria, which dates back to the 1st century AD, contains a number of recipes, including a kind of bread made with pomegranate seeds, pine nuts, raisins, barley mash, and honeyed wine. This was packed with calories, was portable, and had a long shelf life, so Roman soldiers would take them when they set off to do a battle. I saw them compared to energy bars in a lot of the research I did for this, but basically, this thing was the tadpole to the frog that is fruitcake.
Are you trying to make fun of me?
Yeah! I forgot you were there. No, I wasn't trying to make fun of you. You're not even a frog. You just kinda sound like one.
Yeah, well, I'm keeping an eye on you.
You should be keeping an eye on the evolution of fruitcake, because one thing you'll notice the Roman recipe lacks is spices. No cinnamon, no nutmeg, nothing. That's partly because those kind of spices were hard to come by in ancient Rome. But if we jump ahead to the Middle Ages, those spices became more readily available, as did dried fruits. And, after the fall of Rome, this proto-fruitcake recipe, now with added spices and fruit, makes its way out of Rome into Italy, Germany, and England. And no disrespect to Italy's panforte or Germany's stollen, we're going to follow this story to England. And then to Brazil and back to England. You see, the sugar boom of the 16th century, where England was importing a lot of sugar from its colony in Brazil, led to an abundance of sugar in jolly old England, which led to a method of preserving fruit by soaking it in sugar. This candied fruit would last a lot longer, so much so that folks might be left with too much of it. The modern-day fruitcake was pretty much developed as a way to utilize all that extra candied fruit. The added benefit of using the candied fruit is that the fruitcake is now sweeter and more decadent. Then there's the process of seasoning a fruitcake.
You mean the spices?
Oh no! Seasoning a fruitcake isn't about spices, it's about spirits.
Like ghosts and goblins?
More like rum and brandy and bourbon. They say you should brush the fruitcake periodically with your preferred booze and then wrap it up tight and store it in a cool, dark place for months. I saw one recipe saying to wrap the fruitcake in liquor-soaked cheesecloth and re-soak the cloth once a week for 3 months. That fruitcake is imbibing more alcohol in 3 months than I have in 3 years. So the fruit, the sugar, and the booze all helped to make the fruitcake very popular. At the same time, there were now a lot of steps and ingredients involved in making a fruitcake after all these changes. So fruitcake starts to become something saved for special occasions like weddings and... Wait, what's the name of this podcast again? Yeah, you know what's up. Christmas. Both because they took so much time and effort to make and because fruit was otherwise scarce in the winter, fruitcake became a popular seasonal dessert. But you know what happens when people start enjoying something too much? Some killjoys have to try and put a stop to it. That's right, continental Europe dropped the ban hammer on fruitcake in the early 18th century. With all that fruit, sugar, and alcohol, fruitcake was deemed sinfully rich. The powers that be felt it was just too much for the general population to handle. But the ban didn't last long, especially when the dessert escaped Europe, went across the pond to America, where no less than George Washington's wife, Martha...
Why did you say that name?
Look, Batman, I hope you're having a great 85th birthday, but can you get out of here, please? I'm talking about Martha Washington's fruitcake recipe. We still have this today. You can look it up. In fact, I put it in the show notes of this episode. If you would like to make fruitcake from back at the dawn of America, made by the first lady herself, you can do that. Find the link in the show notes. But credit for taking the fruitcake from popular seasonal dessert to a Christmas phenomenon should probably go to the United States Post Office. I can't believe I left this out when we did a feature about the USPS back in April of 2020, but after they began the rural free delivery in 1896 and then added the parcel post service in 1913, there was an explosion of mail order foods in America. This was fruitcake's time to shine! Its long shelf life made it perfect for being a mail order food. Now people were sending Christmas fruitcakes all over the place. It became big business to make fruitcakes. In fact, two of the companies that did it even way back in the day are still at it now, Clayton Bakery in Georgia and Collins Street Bakery in Texas. By the 1950s, a fruitcake was a must-have for the Christmas season.
Chocolate cakes and butter cakes and cakes with lots of spice. Layer cakes and angel cakes I think are very nice. But when it comes to Christmas time, can anyone dispute that when you bake a Christmas cake, it really should be, surely could be, yes, it would be, positively, absolutely, must be made with fruit. Fruitcake!
People had fruitcake parties, they used fruitcake for fundraisers, and a 1953 article in the Los Angeles Times called fruitcake a must-have. But fruitcake wouldn't stay on top forever. Now, if this was a Netflix documentary, this is when the music would get super serious and the video would switch to black and white. There you go. By the end of the 1980s, fruitcake would no longer be at the top of the Christmas food chain. Yes, somewhere between Marty McFly getting his parents to fall in love during the Enchantment Under the Sea dance and Doc Brown showing Marty the DeLorean for the first time at the Lone Pines Mall, the tide had turned for fruitcake.
Nobody likes a fruitcake, boo-diddy-boo-hoo. Nobody likes a fruitcake, we're feeling pretty blue. We see the looks you give us at these holiday events.
We know when we're not wanted. Come on, we're not that dense.
Some attribute this to changing tastes for desserts. People started gravitating towards lighter, fluffier desserts, like the kind Betty Crocker and Duncan Hines were making. Still others cite legendary Tonight Show host Johnny Carson for his relentless jokes at the expense of fruitcakes.
I'm going to talk about fruitcakes. We had a lady on last night, I think her name was Gladys Farrick from Texas, who made fruitcakes. We have made a lot of jokes. Did you ever get a fruitcake for Christmas?
Always. I got one this Christmas.
Do you eat it?
No.
See, that's the damnedest thing.
Yeah.
Nobody eats them.
You keep it for a long time.
You put it up in the closet somewhere, yeah. And then you wait till next Christmas and you to somebody else.
He also famously said, the worst Christmas gift is fruitcake. There's only one fruitcake in the entire world and people keep sending it to each other. Whatever the reason, fruitcake went from being a favorite to being a punchline. In 1989, MasterCard did a survey, and 75% of the people thought fruitcake was the gift they least wanted to receive. But it would seem that America is the main place where fruitcake hate runs rampant. In Europe, fruitcake doesn't nearly have the bad reputation that it has here. I really should have asked Adam about it when he's here doing his five golden things. But lest you think the hate for fruitcake is ubiquitous in America, there are large swaths of people who still love this heavy, heavy Christmas dessert. And there are some people in America even trying to use fruitcake to bring people together. There is a congressman from Oregon named Earl Blumenauer who has a tradition every Christmas of baking up a bunch of fruitcake and taking it around to his colleagues on both sides of the aisle.
Fruitcake. It's the holiday season's most despised dessert. But for the last 22 years, Oregon Democratic Congressman Earl Blumenauer has been lobbying his fellow lawmakers to join the Confections Caucus.
We're doing a little drive-by caking.
We're drive-by caking here.
Drive-by fruit caking.
That means surprising his colleagues with a treat he's loved since childhood. He makes hundreds every year over his Thanksgiving holiday. The congressman's fruitcake is welcome at any party, even the grand old party. He delivers to his Republican colleagues as well.
Hey, this is awesome. Who says fruitcake's no good? It's pretty good.
Want to sample a piece of fruitcake?
You know what? For you, anything.
Well,
any sacrifice.
I'm sure it's a sacrifice.
But when even a taste is a sacrifice, why does he do it? He says it forms a connection with his colleagues that he can't get anywhere else. And he hopes that the spirit of giving something one hates a try might just make its way into the House chamber.
One of the best guys you get to work with in Washington, D.C.
In these divisive political times, leave it to fruitcake to bring people together. And maybe it doesn't hold the exalted place in the Christmas celebration it once did, but 2 million are sold every year and still more people make their own. So this Christmas, treat yourself to some fruitcake and get a taste of a treat older than the holiday itself. Don't mind if I do.
Oh no. Oh, I forgot. I don't like fruitcake. Why did I take such a big bite? Oh, I mean, I'm glad you like it, but play some music or something. Let's move on to the next segment.
Please don't send me fruitcake. It just sits there on the plate. So please don't send me fruitcake. Send me anything but fruitcake. Please don't send me fruitcake this year. Please.
Before we go, let's see how you voted in our head-to-head music fight club. Who sang it best? Last episode, I asked you to decide who sang It Came Upon a Midnight Clear the best between Ella Fitzgerald and Julie Andrews. And the vote went 53% to 47% in favor of Julie Andrews. Yes, even though it was close and it came down to the wire, Mary Poppins came upon a midnight clear victory in this matchup. Thank you to everyone who voted, and I hope you'll play again next time when we do a future round of Who Sang It Best. And that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. If you, by chance, have not gotten enough TimBab Christmas in your ears, you're in luck. I was recently a guest on the Totally Rad Christmas podcast. Jerry had both myself and Mike from the Advent Calendar House podcast on, and we discussed the Sesame Street news flash. It was a skit where Kermit is waiting for Santa. I don't want to spoil it. It's kind of a short skit, but we made it into a very long, very enjoyable, very funny episode, and I'm going to put the link to that episode in the show notes of this episode so you can give it a listen. Speaking of the show notes, they are packed with links for you this time. You've got the link to the Vote Holly McTiernan sign, as well as the link to episode 74 so you can listen or re-listen to A Bomb for Christmas. There's also the link to Martha Washington's fruitcake recipe, and I threw in a link to a more modern recipe if you just want that instead. And of course, we got the link to Merry Britsmas, where you can go and thank Adam for joining us on the show today. Alright, my sack of podcast presents is empty for now, but I'll be back down your audio chimney on the 25th of next month. And until then, Yule Believers, keep laughing all the way.
And that was Christmas 1983.
Actually, Dad, it's 2024.
Oh.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, if you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes, and email us about it at christmas@tancast.com, we'll send you a free Can't Wait for Christmas sticker. If you'd like to see the show notes or leave a comment on this or any other episodes, you can go to our official website, cantwaitforchristmaspod.com. While you're there, you'll find a link to our official Zazzle store, where you can grab customizable t-shirts, ornaments, stickers, and all sorts of other Christmas-themed items all year long. We'd love to connect with you on social media. On TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, we are Can't Wait for Christmas Pod. And on the app formerly known as Twitter, we are at Christmas Pod. We Wish You a Merry Christmas was performed by the United States Marine Corps Band, and this amazing version of Jingle Bells on the accordion was performed by the wonderful and talented Christian Nowicki. All other music and sounds used in this episode are the properties of their individual copyright holders, and they are used for purposes of commentary and review. No infringement is intended. Okay, boys, did I forget anything?
God bless us, everyone.
Merry Christmas!
I'm Holly McTiernan, and I approve this message.
I think I might have talked over the I'm, so do it one more time. Because you said this is, and I started to say I'm, and then you're like, I got it, it's And Taylor's joke about the eggs made me realize that I can totally doodle on... it made me realize I need to read!
You have two cartons of eggs in your fridge?
What? Where is my impression? Where is it? Where? Help me find it! Reward! One impression of Kermit the Frog, last seen in Tim's mouth a month ago. I know I should pause this and get my glasses, because I'm having a hard time reading! Yeah! Well, I accidentally pressed stop instead of pause, so this is working out great. And if you haven't heard our August episode, I feel like I'm saying things weird. Like, I'm saying the words, but they're coming out weird. Like, I feel like you're going to listen to this and go, why is he talking weird? I don't know, it's not on purpose. The world's oldest surviving cookbook, De Re Culinaria. Yeah, I'm sure I said that right. De Re Culinaria? Culinaria. I'm going to make a guess and go with it. If any ancient Romans have a problem with it, come at me, Brosif! Fun fact, I did not have a fruitcake handy, so I was eating a banana. The magic of podcasting.